Hello, friends. Today is November 1st, 2014, here in Finland. Here it is All Saints Day, the day after Halloween. It's fascinating how the extremes, the lower levels of the astral plane and the very highest type of devotion and appreciation are side by side. Well, maybe it's just a coincidence that it is today, All Saints Day, but I was out for a walk. It seems the way to stay alive is to walk through life. Maybe it takes me back to the old days of, I think, being one of those peripatetic philosophers, the kind that walked and talked. Or at least walked a good deal behind those who were really saying something at the time. Every once in a while, I think I see something. Maybe it comes from the strong Aquarius influence in my astrological chart. You know, the Tibetan talks about the highs and lows of the Aquarian person, the sunny heights. Today the sun is shining, even though the weather is very, very warm, even though it's November 1st up here in the northern latitudes. And there are gray days, and they alternate, and so it is with the psyche. There are periods when one can really see, and other periods when one's vision is obscured, occluded. Well, I work on many things. You know, this is that series called Adventures in Identification. Seems like one of the most important things to do is to learn how to identify which the monad within us already does in a constant way. And that monad is we ourselves, the one and only I, the one, and ultimately the absolute. So every once in a while I get a bright idea. I keep them in my little red books, or, well, it's black and red, okay. So here's my red book, here's my black book. I keep changing these things. And write down many ideas, and some of them may have some value. It seems everything that I'm trying to do in my life at this time is to prove to my consciousness, in terms of realization, the one and only reality, the being, the self, the absolute, call it whatever you will, the none other, the sameness. It's a bit of a repetitive theme. And yet, within this, whatever it is, there is no change. And yet, all change is included. If you go to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, page 285, you'll see the six trumpeted words or phrases used in ancient times, even more ancient than the Senzar, he tells us. And they trumpeted forth the realizations that can come when one is truly attuned to reality. There are six statements, and the last one, being cries forth and says, and then it says untranslatable. We don't know what being cries forth and says. Death crumbles all. Existence disappears, yet all for A remains, untouched, immutably the same. God is. I take great sustenance from those phrases, and I've used them before. You know, if anybody is interested in what type of realization must come. Just go to those six trumpeted phrases which contain the key to all philosophy, the key to all wisdom or love of wisdom. Existence disappears, yet all for A remains. How is that possible? Existence disappears. This vast universe on all of its levels, however many there are, maybe 10 dimensions, maybe, but all of it, in all of its incredible vastness, at least to our consciousness, vastness to our consciousness, yet all for A remains, even after it disappears, untouched and immutably the same as ever. The one reality, the same as ever. So I got to thinking. You know, I'm doing this kind of spontaneously. I really haven't made any notes on it, to read from right here. But, well, how many universes have there been? How many exhalations of the great breath? Because that's what a universe is. It's the ray of the absolute being flashing forth, or as it were, exhaled in the process of the great breath, which seems to occur. It may or may not occur in reality. You know, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. Come forth into the light of day. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, the glory of the One and Only. This is from these monadic stanzas that we call the Blessed One. So that's the third ray stanza. And I find for myself, you know, that probably that third ray on the monadic level, on one of those monadic levels, it's got to be very important for me because I need to think through reality or think deeply about what reality is and to use the reasoning process. Of course, for those of us who may be on the third ray monad, in one of the monadic rays, there has to be a transfer, we are told, to the second ray. I sometimes hope that that is happening, that would, I think, perhaps be going more on the logoic plane, maybe, according to my latest theory, to be proved true or not true, when those who know better can demonstrate to me the truth or non-truth of these theories, and maybe when my own intuition demonstrates to me the truth or non-truth of these theories. That's the borderline between the abstract mind and the intuition. The abstract mind speculates, and the intuition knows. So anyway, how many universes? And you have to say, well, infinitudinous, countless universes, countless. I can't say it's the quadrillionth. I've been through a quadrillion, sextillion, nonillion, whatever. I can't say I've been through a Google universes, Google. It's a huge number with 100 zeros. Well, with 100 zeros after it. I can't say I've been I, the one and only I, the we, the I, the only being that is. I can't say that we've projected that ray of the absolute a Googleplex times, which represented would be one with Google zeros after it, and who could write that? A Google zeros. Nor can I say that I have been through, I, you know what I mean, I don't mean as a personality at all, because this personality is just the briefest self-perception, a great evanescence, that which disappears when wider perception is achieved. I can't say I, you know what I mean by I now. I sometimes, you know, make it like this. I say, here's a quotation mark, here's a big zero, and here's another quotation mark. Well, the better way to do it would be a quotation mark and then nothing, and then another quotation mark. How many times have I understood in that way? Has it been a Googleplexion? Because I don't think there is a number conceived larger than a Googleplexion of universes, of exhalations of the great breath, of rays of the absolute, going forth into self-objectification. And a Googleplexion is represented by one with a Googleplex zeros after it. But then, of course, it could keep on going, couldn't it? I mean, just imagine one with a Googleplexion of zeros after it. It's that one, of course, that tells you that something is happening, as opposed to nothing, which is everything. And one with a Googleplexion to the Googleplexioneth power of zeros after it, and on and on and on and on. What could be the number with one plus an infinitude of zeros after it? You couldn't count it. It would never end. So, how many have I experienced? Well, it just shows that I understood in the way I'm trying to describe it, meaning the only being there is in self-objectification, in self-perception, because that's what a universe is, in my view anyway, the self-perception of the one and only. It's this huge state of limitation. Once you get into self-perception, you no longer have absolute infinitescence, absolute beingness. But, you know, it seems vast to these minute projections of the one that we call ourselves. It turns out I've experienced an infinitude of universes. Now, you know, in some types of mathematics there are greater and lesser infinitudes. Try to wrap your mind around that one. But these greater and lesser infinitudes, we'll leave that to the mathematicians to solve. I guess, in my view, well, temporary view, I've experienced an absolute infinitude of universes, because this has been going on forever. But let's just say, without getting into the details of distinguishing infinitude from absolute infinitude, that I've experienced an infinitude of universes. Now, is it just now that I've experienced an infinitude of universes? What is now, anyway? What about tomorrow? Will I have experienced an infinitude of universes? What about 10,000 universes hence? Will I have experienced an infinitude of universes? What about a Google universes hence? Will I have experienced an infinitude of universes? And the answer is yes, but in a way there's no difference. Because the truth is, given the perpetual motion of the absolute breath, if it is a reality, it certainly is an actuality, that I've always experienced an infinitude of universes. Always. That means that no matter how far back I go, a Google, a Googleplex, a Googleplexion, a Googleplexion to Googleplexioneth power, whatever, no matter how far back, apparently back, I go, I've always experienced an infinitude of universes. The implications are staggering, because there's no point in time, no point in the duration of the great breath throughout eternity, absolute eternity, there's no time, in which I have not experienced an infinitude of universes. No, it's always been the case that an infinitude of universes precedes the one in which I am currently experiencing, just as an infinitude of universes succeeds in a way I've never moved. There's only one point. That point is now, and it's always equidistant from beginninglessness and endlessness, if you can conceive of them in that way. So another program I'll take up the idea that there is no movement, and that pure being, which I am, can never move. Because to move, it takes division and parts, and there is no division. The first division is the great breath, and so it leads you to question whether the boundless immutable principle can be divided, and whether the second fundamental of the secret doctrine is effective in actuality but not in reality, that there is this great breath, this great periodicity. Maybe periodicity is also an illusion. It's an effective illusion because we have to deal with it forever in terms of our consciousness and our perception. So it turns out that I've always experienced an infinitude of universes, always. That means that my experience is always infinitely full. What does it mean, infinitely full? That all that is possible is there? Well, here's the interesting thing about infinity that makes you think about our experience. It's always infinitely full, meaning that an infinitude of self-registrations has always occurred. Infinitude of self-registrations. So how many is an infinitude? Well, just as big as it could possibly be, and bigger. Now, this is the point. Can you add one to infinitude? Infinity plus one? Infinity plus one is infinity. Infinity minus one is infinity. Infinity multiplied by infinity is infinity. Infinity subtracted from infinity, well, that's... Well, let's do it like this. One subtracted from infinity is still infinity. Plus minus one times infinity is infinity. 1 divided into infinity is infinity. So infinity stays very stable. There's just nothing, no thing you can add to it, let's say. So, you know, okay, I've always experienced an infinitude of universes. Now I'm having another experience. Can I really add anything to the infinitudinous experiences I've already had? Infinity plus one is infinity. Nothing new can be added. And that's, we're interested in the additive mode. We're not taking away, because every time we have a new universe, we think it counts for something, and it's added to our experience. But that's the question. Can anything be added to infinitudinous experience? And if it's already infinitudinous, nothing can be added. Well, this gets into the metaphysics about whether any universe is really happening at all. Because if you go back as far as you can go, my experience has always been infinitely full. And the new one doesn't make any difference in the sum. So however far back I go, a Googleplexian of universes, and let's just say that there have been a Googleplexian of universes since that universe to which I directed my attention, nothing has been added. Of course, I believe that's true of the absolute infinitude. Nothing can be added, subtracted. No operation can occur upon it whatsoever. No arithmetic operation can occur. Well, if a Googleplexian of universes, let's say, amounts to what? To nothing. It's as if, you know, infinitude plus zero is infinitude. Infinitude plus one is infinitude. Infinitude plus any number is infinitude. Infinitude ends up being a kind of stable absolute. So is anything really happening? You know, I'm having this experience. But is it something? Or is it itself a kind of cipher, a zero? Is one equal to zero? Well, in a way, I am saying one is equal to zero. The apparent one is really equal to the zero of complete absolute fullness. So all the universes that I've experienced endlessly nothing can add to my experience at any point in time, any point in endless duration. It's already absolutely full. The absolute is absolutely full. You can't do a thing to it. Untouched, immutably the same. Going back to what DK said. Untouched, immutably the same. Yet all for A remains, even after the universe disappears, or any universe disappears, untouched, untouched. There's nothing else to touch it. Immutably the same as it ever was, which is absolutely so infinitely complete that nothing can be done. So nothing, no operation can occur upon it, nothing can be done to it. It remains untouched. I mean, you can't have an operation if nothing can be done to it. There needs to be a second thing to operate upon another thing. You can't operate upon that untouchable. Now think about how untouchable means the very lowest of human beings. Untouchable is also the very the absolute, the very infinitely high being. Can't use normal language here, really. So, forever, everything that I've been experiencing is like a cipher. It's already been done within the absolute. I call it the infinitescence. There's nothing new under the sun. That's a way of expressing this. Every new universe is not new. It only seems to be, and that's the game that we choose to play in our own consciousness, to play within our own consciousness. Any choice we make has already been made. That's not that it's predetermined, because we have the experience of making the choice. We, the projection of the absolute, have the experience in a state of incredible limitation, of making a choice. We have the experience of making a difference. We can only make a difference in the illusion. In reality, there is no difference. We cannot make a difference. We cannot operate upon that which remains immutably the same. So we've been apparently adding experiences in a sequential manner, infinitely so, And yet, all of our addition turns out to be the addition simply of zeros, which are masquerading as ones. Somehow, realizing this, and there's still much more depth of realization through which I have to pass, gave me a sense of joy. Perhaps not yet bliss, but a sense of joy. Not necessarily happiness, but a sense of uplift, coming closer to realization. See, there is perfection, and we are the perfection forever. God is. We are God. No, they'll kill you for that one, you know. We are God. We are the absolute. We are the only thing that is. We are perfect, infinitely perfect in every possible way, and every combination of any kind and any possible relationship that ever works out in time and space has been worked out forever in the infinitescence, the essential absolute infinitude. You know, we could get into the question in my book, Infinitization of Self, what I've tried somewhat to get into the reason, a very paltry term, the reason of why any of this is occurring infinitely. Why the great breath? Why self-objectification? Why infinite limitation? Every universe is an infinite limitation upon the absolute infinitude. Any definite quantity, from one to Googleplexian to any possible definite quantity, is an infinite limitation upon absoluteness. So why do we get into this game? Because, in a way, we are and have been forever everything that ever could be. We are the very essence of all that could be. We embrace within our beingness any possibility. We are all of it, forever. Nothing can be added to it by our experience. Only in relative time and space can there be apparent addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. Those arithmetic operations do not apply to the absolute infinitude, which we are. So sometime I'm going to try in a conversational way to get into the reason, well, what can the paltry mind of man do? Get into the reason that any of this should have occurred or is occurring whatsoever. Why the great breath? Why isn't it enough? You know, there is a boundless, immutable principle. Finish the end. Nothing else. But we are told God is, the Lord for A stands firm, being exists alone, naught else is. Time is. Being descends to manifest. There's the mystery. Being descends to manifest. Being descends to manifest. Creation is. Time then and form agree. Being and time do not agree. Being descends to manifest. How? How? In my analysis, it's been through a diminution of self-sight. Deliberate diminution of self-sight. That's what we are, each one of us. We are an unbelievably small diminution of self-sight. Anyway, I get into that whole theory, and I'll try to elaborate on it. My youngest son said to me, well, Dad, you've written a book here, and now you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to explain it. But what he didn't say to me was that I was going to spend the rest of my life trying to explain it to myself. So I'm not adding anything, I'm not subtracting anything, I'm not having any new experience, I'm not, you know, it's all been done within me forever. But I am having an aesthetic experience, a dramatic experience, a play, a dance, some sort of drama in limitation. Every limitation is the severest limitation. I can't say, you know, I can't say that a googolplexian is any larger than the number one when I'm talking in the absolute sense. Because if I take a googolplexian of universes and compare it, of course it is the incomparable, but I compare it to the one and only, it becomes what I call the ultimate infinitesimal, which is converging on zero. It becomes, everything is next, that's my new aphorism. I think I better write it down, excuse me. Everything is next to nothing. Excuse me. But, you know, ideas come. Beethoven used to walk through the Vienna woods with his notebook because he would catch everything is next to nothing. Now, you know, I'll think about that later. Everything is next to nothing. That means if I compare one to absolute infinitude, or if I compare a googolplexian to absolute infinitude, they're the same quantity. They are the ultimate infinitesimal. A thing which is smaller than any designatable thing, however small that thing may be. So, you know, what's really apparently going on has already happened forever within the infinitessence. Now, we have to take seriously the illusion, because we are that illusion. We become the illusion habitually forever and have become so. But it really is not affecting our reality. Our reality remains untouched, immutably the same. Untouched and unafraid. Ray the same. God is. I am. We are. I mean, you know, we don't want to get ego inflation about that. We are just the tiniest of self-observations at the moment, that which we consider ourselves to be. We're not going to suddenly walk around and say, oh, I am God, so... No, you have to play by the rules of the illusion. There are laws and rules in this illusion, and the only way to ascend to the state from which we came, which we've never left, is to play by the rules, play by the laws, obey the self-imposed laws. But, in a way, none of it makes any difference to absolute reality, but it makes all the difference in the world to that ray of the absolute which precipitates the state of self-objectification. You know, in other words, the whole universe is a self-perception, is what I'm saying, and an infinitely small one at that. Any specifiable quantity is equal to any other specifiable quantity when compared with absolute infinitude. Now, one day I'll, you know, get into the mathematics of all this. It's, I think, a perilous path. Somehow I have a great admiration for Georg Cantor, the German mathematician who essayed to understand infinity, in a way which no one had before him, at least no one in recorded history, and he went mad. And he was probably doing it for different reasons, but he had a religious, metaphysical reason. He was a Catholic, maybe he was a Jewish Catholic, I don't know. He wanted to prove something about deity. He wanted to make deity more real. Well, so do I. You know, I want to make the self more real. I don't have his mathematical ability. And, of course, anything can develop in time. One, you know, if there's a will, there's a way, one can develop such an ability. And maybe I'll get further into it, but so many mathematicians they do it for the sake of mathematics. And I would say, you know, maybe like Georg Cantor, I do it for the sake of God. I do it for the sake of the self. I have an axe to grind here. You know, I have something to prove. It's to use these mathematical concepts to prove the nature, the infinite nature of reality and the ultimate infinitesimality, whatever we can call it, infinitesimality of everything. So it doesn't make any difference at all, nothing. And yet, within the scope of the scene, the drama which we ever project from ourselves, it makes a huge difference in terms of the purpose and the plan within that self-projected drama. So can it make a difference in this drama? If we were to meditate a little here, if we were to meditate just a little, to try to make some of these realizations which seem to be dawning on my consciousness more real to myself, more real to all of us. Try to enter into a state of realization. We, what are we? We are nothing that we no thing that we think we are. We certainly know we are not the personality. It is a temporary utilitarian perception, self-perception. And we identify as the soul at times, but we're not that, really. We go through all the perceptions that we might be. We even enter the vehicle of the monad, imaginatively, the temple of Ezekiel. Any quality or attribute that I seem to have in that high state, I am not that. But at the very core of the monad is this essence, a volatile essence in alchemy. It will fly away from all encapsulations of its identity. It will fly and fly into greater rings, pass not forever until, once again, the vastness of the universe becomes its apparent ring pass not. And that too will be broken. And the volatile essence turns out to be nothing less than the ray of the Absolute, radiating forth into self-objectification. That's what radiation really is on that level. It's an entry into the experience of self-objectification instead of the ongoing, no, you can't call it experience, the ongoing state of being, the infinitescence. So the ray of the Absolute is an entry into limitation, and really absolute limitation. And working one's way out of that. So we, the monad in extension, the beingness in extension, the infinitescence in extension, and extension simply means the X, EX is added to it, the entry into self-perception instead of absolute self-beingness, we are in a state of immense imposed self-limitation, and we are apparently working our way out of it, breaking one ring pass knot after another, until, for the infinitith time, and what is that, the universal ring pass knot is broken. And the volatile essence, then but one apparent thing, is retracted as the retractable ray of the Absolute into itself, and then there is no more self-extension. Maybe there never is. But at least in this experience of a periodicity throughout time and duration, throughout eternal duration, this experience of time throughout eternal duration once again comes to an end. All ends are relative, because the absoluteness is immutably the same in its all-inclusiveness of every possibility forever accomplished, forever been. So here we are, adding experiences, improving, falling, encountering, relating, and yet somehow it's all been done forever, no matter what we choose. The apparent limited self, choosing through apparently free will, no matter what we choose, it's all been forever accomplished in the beingness of the infinitescence. So many paradoxes. We've already had forever, all the time in the world, all the time. Well, eternal duration has always transpired. And yet it seems to go on. But the ongoingness of it is just our limited perception, our time-limited perception. We are in a state of completeness and perfection forever. We are in a state of timelessness forever. And yet cyclically, the drama unfolds as it has forever. We've had a foreverness of dramas forever. A foreverness of appearances forever. There's no point of externalization, apparent externalization, where a foreverness of self-projections has not already occurred. And it all, in a sense, means nothing, and it all, in a sense, means everything. Where is patience? eternal duration is. Duration has durated eternally, forever, at any point. It's going to bring us to the eternal now, in which the phantasmagorical kaleidoscope reveals an ultimately infinitesimal aspect of ourselves to ourselves periodically, while we don't move, never move off the spot. We're at the point, and we always are at the point, except when the point is retracted. And then again, brought forth. But every universe occurs in no time at all, as does every period in which there is no time, and thus the paradoxes. So one wonders, does periodicity occur at all, except in illusion, which is our actuality? Ever deeper we must go, realizing we are adding nothing to that which we are, but we're having a periodical aesthetic experience in a state of ultimate limitation, as every state which is not that of pure infinitesimal is a state of ultimate limitation. The minute you create any specific number, a one, and any other derivation from the one, you have entered a state of absolute limitation. Or maybe I should call it ultimate limitation. So we're having an aesthetic experience, and nothing we do or don't do adds or takes a single thing from that which we are, essentially. Though all is God and all is of God, and it is our self-imposed duty to do our best with the self-imposed purpose and plan of this ultimate limitation, this ultimate negligibility, that's what I want to call it, negligibility, we call the universe, or any universe. So we play by the rules which we have imposed at the dawn of the appearance of ultimate negligibility. Well, it's all meant to improve the quality of our extremely limited experience in the universe, which is also, because it is a one, an ultimate negligibility. That means the very smallest possible infinitesimal converging upon zero. So we do the best we can according to our own self-imposed laws, realizing deeply with great confidence that nothing will ever touch our true nature. Space is, time and space reverberate and hide the one who stands behind. True being is, unknown and unafraid, untouched, for A, unchanged. True being is. Unknown and unafraid, untouched, for A, unchanged. So the way we live our life, if we can bring philosophy together with practical livingness, should change for the better, at least as better is conceived in time and space and within this ultimate negligibility we call the universe. Everything is equal. Everything is equal. If it's a specific thing, it's all equal. Nothing's bigger than anything else. Nothing's less than anything else. In the eyes of eternal duration and absoluteness, all quantities and durations are exactly the same. They are the ultimate negligibility of time or of space. The point is that dimensionless, smaller than any possible quantity, so every point is an infinitesimalizing, converging upon zero. And we're in this state of limitation, apparently adding to ourselves, improving, increasing, becoming better and better, etc., etc., which we are, relatively speaking, and must continue and do with all zeal and all fiery intent. And yet, God is. I am. We are. Untouched and unafraid. For A, unchanged. So a very great confidence can arise from knowing the perfection that is and that we are that, and then somehow enjoying the self-projection, the self-observation, the self-recognition, the self-reflection, which we apparently are. See how I appear in all things. See how I appear. See how I appear. And this leads to identification, a sustained identification as identical with any possible perception, which is but a self-perception. Any perception is but a self-perception. So, mathematical operations apply to the relative self, as relatively great or small as it may be, until there is but one. And that one really is the zero and is retracted into zeroness, which is absolute infinitude. The retraction of one into zero, infinitely having occurred. Then you begin to wonder whether it occurred at all, ever, and whether the universe ever arose and whether anything ever moved, ever. In a way, not. Immutability ever is. And yet, the apparent mutability. This is the great thing to solve. It's been going on forever. Mutability is forever, cyclically. And yet, all specific durations are an ultimate negligibility, and add them all together and you get a virtual nothingness. It's like nothing has ever happened. It has in illusory experience, and it's a great show forever. One more curtain call. Forever. So, you know, sometimes you see those Buddhas, maybe the Chinese kind, the laughing Chinese Buddhas. They seem to have eaten too much. They have this big stomach. They're pretty happy. They've realized something. They realized perfection, timelessness, untouchability, immutability. They've realized what they are. They have all the time in the world and always have had. And eternal duration has always elapsed. They dissolve time and space. They drag it through the eye of the needle. I think only a point can pass through the eye of the needle. Only a point. And a point is next to nothing. A point has no time, has no space, but is. And anything that is as a point is really an illusion, because the absoluteness is pointless. But the point appears, apparently, and has forever. So it's important to know what kind of drama we're in, what kind of play we're in. We, an ultimate negligibility, an extension of the monad, an extension of the infinite essence. Every extension is self-extension. It's needless to extend. Extend into what? Maybe extend into self-objectification. Well, if we keep up this way, we can maybe dissolve the limiting mind and enter into that state of beingness. We're obliged to function in the illusion, of course. We have to make it beautiful. Beautify the illusion. Archetypalize the apparent moment. We have to do all that. Forever. And we've been doing it. So there's no, you know, you can't escape into some kind of duality and say, well, now I'm the absolute, don't have to worry about relativity. We always are the absolute in the face of that self-projection that we call relativity, and it's us too. There is no not us. There is no other. There, you know, there's illusion is us. Apparent. The apparency is the reality, ultimately. So we have no excuse not to do things well. As in illusion, they need to be done. Wash the dishes, clean the floor, dig in the garden, take out the garbage. What? Chop the wood and carry water. Isn't that what they say? We have to do all that forever. But it's the way we do it. It's the attitude. It's the realization while doing it of what we are. Now, I can't say I've mastered that. Well, of course, I've mastered it infinitudinously. Never had to master it, right? Because I've always been it, right? But, and however, you know, infinitudinously, the mastery has been there, because who's the being who has mastered universes? There is but one, and how can you divide yourself from that? So, in infinitudinously, the illusory mastership has occurred. But this is now, apparent now. It always is. And in this state of ultimate limitation, every state of limitation is ultimate limitation. Even if you're the logos of the entire universe, you're in a state of ultimate negligibility until you're retracted as a one into the zero. So, now I'm doing it again for the infinitive time. And every time I've done it has been the infinitive time. I guess one has to enjoy it. Realizing we've done it, we've made it, we are it. Not is but me. Not is but me. Not is but me. It's got to make a difference in the psychology, in our psychology. in our way of living. It has to make a difference. Otherwise, what would be the use of philosophy? The love of wisdom is philosophy, and wisdom reveals, naught is but me. It's a me to which nothing can be added, subtracted, into which nothing can be divided, nor can that me be multiplied by any other quantity. There's no other quantity to multiply it. That's the interesting thing. So, philosophy of identification, the experience of identification, the experience of being all, even though, you know, what do they say? It has to do with thinking globally, working locally, something like that. Well, thinking absolutely and working as an illusory point within the absoluteness. This is the universal extension of that. Our universal logos is working locally within himself. Can he cross the great divide? He, she, it, you know, can't use divisive terms there. Can the one cross the divide into zero? Well, in a way, the one doesn't have to, because the one has never ceased being the zero. However, there is the experience of being retracted as the ray of the absolute back into the zero, which is all possible. And one day, that experience will be ours, as it ever has been, forever. So this is what we do. We've been doing it forever, cyclically forever. This is what we do. Adding nothing to the self which we are, which is absolute perfection. But in this state of perceived limitation, we are actors in the drama. And we've arranged it, the play, the dance, the Lila. We've become it. So, we might as well enjoy it. Okay, friends, that's about an hour's worth or so. I don't know if it was a discussion, a meditation. What was it? But anyway, while I was out for this walk this morning and the sun was shining uncharacteristically warm on this November 1st day, when everybody would expect in Finland for us to be way below zero, I thought, arithmetic just doesn't work in relation to what I really am. And the fullness of my experience has been infinitely full forever. So what am I adding to the real self? And I thought, well, I was going to do something, you know, I was going to do something in the rays and the initiations. I was going to discuss that further, because I like to talk about what Master DK has said and maybe offer some interpretive ideas which will be of help. I said, but no, I've got to talk about this now today, because maybe once a month something comes upon me and I just feel the impulsion that I must talk about it. Now, maybe you'll say, well, I'm only saying the same thing forever, and that's really true. Forever, I'm saying the same thing, that one is zero, one equals zero. And there's no difference between them, no real difference between them, only an apparent difference. That's what I'm saying. And maybe I'm finding infinitudinous ways to approach the subject. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, friends, let's have an om for the endless road. And more than likely I'll come back with a magical word or two, or some thought far out, in the attempt to establish all of us more deeply in the state of identification with pure being, which we forever are. See you before long, in time. Bye-bye.